We've lost.
No, not yet. Sideswipe! Give me your rocket pack.
My rocket pack?
Now!
Yeah, right.
In a cold, faraway world, a battle is raging between evil and good. From the stars that came here to Earth, caught in their struggle through the whole universe. Robotic warriors give it their all, fight in disguise to the victors. There's hope. Transformers.
This is Transformers for your listening pleasure with Guard Convoy, Insane Galvatron, Mirai Baby, Natsume Ryu, Sideburn 2, TFR Cool, and your host, Weirdos.
Greetings again and welcome to TFYLP, episode number 36, recorded May 30th, 2012. Our crew tonight includes a guy who emerged from the plasma bath and failed the Alia solution in Torculon, Insane Galvatron.
What's up, everybody?
And looking strangely like a Reaper from Infamous, Natsume Ryu.
Hello.
And the guy with one yellow monocle, Sideburn 2.
What's up?
And also joining us from Canada, we were going to do a TFCon piece today, but Colin could not make it, so we're going to try to postpone it till next week. However, Proto Man, introduce yourself.
Man. Some of you guys know me from all the multiple podcasts that I frequent. I'm also that dude with the humongous Transformer collection. Some people know me as the Rodimus guy. So, yeah. Glad to be here.
Welcome to TFYLP. We hope you enjoy it here. Thank you for joining us this week. And you'll be here next week whenever hopefully Colin can join us too.
Oh, yeah.
No but we'll move on to our first segment of the week.
Now it's time for Out My Wallet.
I guess we'll go with you, Greg. You want to tell us a little bit what you got?
Well, I didn't get a whole lot this week. I got the big box of knockoffs last week. It was kind of a large dollar amount. So this week, I got one official Transformer. Picked up the Cyberverse Commander Ironhide because I know you had the toy. I messed with yours. Liked it pretty good, and I can say that the one I got is a little better fit than yours. The tolerance is a little better, so it's not as fiddly. First thing I did was I chucked those blue weapons he came with, and I gave him a set of gray weapons from the Dark of the Moon Cyberverse Commander Ironhide.
Which fit perfectly, by the way.
Yes, they do, and it looks great. And then the only other thing I received this week was something I bought on iOffer 2-3 weeks ago, another unofficial Transformer. I got two knockoff Bumblebees, one in white and one in blue.
And you're not going to make them bug bite and glyph.
The G1 ones, just out of curiosity?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, those are awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. The blue one, because I've got glyph right here next, on the desk with me, and it's a slightly different color blue. And glyph has a lot of gray, where this one is still black. And I'm going to try to find me some Herbie stickers to put on the white one.
Now, you should totally make a little meep meep sound there. Yeah. Is that all you picked up, or?
I can't think of anything else. I think that's all I got this week. Just three items.
You got more than that.
Nope, that was all week before. I got all those knockoffs.
Cyber 2, you want to tell us what you got?
No Transformers, but I did buy some Reaper labels for my Botshots.
This is your first set of Reaper labels, isn't it?
Yeah. And I was surprised by the, they're actually pretty good quality. And I don't know why I expect them not to be, because everyone talks about them, but I don't know. I just always worried about, this is like, my only experience with third-party products is the Iger Cuphead and Repro Label stickers. So.
You are young, young Padawan.
I'm a newbie.
They're good. Spencer and them, they do great stuff, though. They really do. And their whole website is totally, like, created by fans. It's people donating their original G1 sticker labels. And that's why they're so dead on. a lot of them. And even their custom stuff is great too. Like, I mean, the one you're referring to that you got, the Botshots one, is awesome. I mean, we were totally expecting stuff like that sooner or later for our Botshots to really, you know, deck them out. But I know, like, especially they do other stuff too, like the Battle Beast stuff, and I mean, they do Rub Signs. Those guys are super talented.
Yeah, I like the Wreckers upgrades from Dark of the Moon.
Oh yeah, those are cool
stickers for the race cars. Love them.
And even the like, they did like a Wheelie-mas Prime sticker sheet for your for your G1 Wheelie, and it actually looks pretty good. As sad as that sounds. Yeah, you know, like, just they make wacky stuff. And it's really fun.
I've bought a number of their sets, you know, to replace stickers on old G1s that I've had. Matter of fact, my one of my few figures that I have left over from my original collection, my G1 Cyclonus, it's the Blue Ear version. The original stickers that were on him whenever I started collecting again way back in the late 90s, the original stickers were quite crappy. I mean, the Decepticon insignia on his chest were... It was just a silver patch. You couldn't even
see
the Decepticon.
Yeah, because it gets faded. Yeah.
So that was actually my very first Repro Label set. And I don't even think they were cut. It was back before he actually started cutting them.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I had a Red Alert set from back then I used on a custom.
And I was totally enamored by them because I took off all the old stickers and then used rubbing alcohol oh so gently to remove the sticker residue, yeah, and then placed the Repro Labels on it, and it looks like a new toy, and it still looks great to this day. And I did that restoration back in 2002, I believe, and It was just amazing, and I've since bought like Triptychon sets. I've restored two full Triptychons with that, and I've also dabbled in a upgrade set. I bought the Generations Wheeljack upgrade set for the first generation Wheeljack that I had, and to me that set just really made Wheeljack with all the Alitalia stickers and everything.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
I mean, it just looks naked without it. The Wheeljack that I have now is just, you know, as it comes out of the package. But I kind of wish I had those stickers again. But they're very good. Repro Labels, I don't think enough people gives them credit. I mean, very
gave
few.
One hell of a plug.
Yeah.
I'm definitely considering them because, you know, when I got my... my reissues Prowl, I was still a kid then, and I didn't put the stickers on very well, so I'm considering, you know, maybe getting some new stickers for him and seeing how that goes.
And their G1 stuff is dead on, like, because that's one thing I could vouch for, like the Minerva ones that they did, because I own original G1 Minerva. It's even better than the original G1 Minervas.
Well, like, sometimes you can't even tell the difference, really.
Yeah, they're really good. They're really, because he gets that perfect like chrome sticker paper, which, you know, is totally out of the 80s. You don't see that kind of stuff mm-hmm. today anymore. I don't know how he gets it, but just great stuff. They've done stuff with TFCon in the past for our custom class. They usually make a sticker or something for our custom class figures, and they're amazing. They're amazing.
He must get that sticker paper from the Keebler elves in the tree behind his house or something.
The Oompa Loompas help him.
Well, yeah. Even the newer reissues don't have stickers as nice as Repro Label stickers.
Oh, of course.
Their quality has gone way down.
Perfect example, the Seacons from BBTS. Their stickers are utter garbage.
Yeah.
I mean, just the stickers that come on it are garbage. I haven't even tried placing these stickers that you're supposed to apply to the figures, because they're already peeling off the sheet. If I do sticker it, I'm going to get some Repro Labels to put on it.
Yeah, so I'm definitely sold on them. I'm going to keep an eye out for them. I saw they just released their first set for Prime figures, and so yeah, I'm definitely going to start keeping my eye on them more.
Yeah, definitely. This is going to be a free plug. Check out reprolabels.com if you haven't already. It's a collector's right hand man.
They do also Power Rangers, Zoids, Battle Beasts.
Zoids.
What else do they do?
I think they do G.I. Joe.
G.I. Joe also recently. Yeah, that's their newest division. Yeah.
Aren't there mask stickers as well?
Yeah, mask. That's the other one. That's right. Wow. Like they cover quite a boundary of fandoms.
Well, Natsumi Ryu, did you pick up anything this week, or have you been busy on Brawl?
Definitely been busy on Brawl. I didn't pick anything up, but John 3.0, for Christmas, he got me Perceptor, and he was unable to send him to me until I opened up the mailbox. I got him today.
Oh.
That's the Reveal the Shield Perceptor. So he's still in the box on my desk in front of me right here, and since I wasn't on last week, I don't think I mentioned Guard Convoy. He was unloading some of his movie figures, and he ended up giving me a Deluxe Brawl, a Deluxe Bone Crusher, the Highbrow figure. I'm looking at my desk. I'm trying to pick out them because they're already starting to merge in with all the others. He found and bought me a War for Cybertron Optimus because he knew that was the only one besides the Cliffjumper I didn't have of the War for Cybertron toys. Mm. And knowing I like Brawl, he also picked me up a Brawl Bot Shot. So I have like six or seven, maybe like eight or nine figures that are new on my desk this week.
Sweet. So you can't say you didn't get anything.
Yeah, I have wonderful friends, and even if I can't afford to pick something up or there's nothing in my stores for me to physically buy, you guys definitely take care of me.
Yeah, she be brawling.
Yeah,
that butt shot. That butt shot's Brawl is my favorite mold of the butt shot so far. He's just nice and bulky.
Hmm. Yeah, he's very cute. He looks great next to the. I have him, especially in tank mode. Him next to the movie Deluxe Brawl. I mean, they look like he's just like a miniature version, except like more tan. Mini me. Yes, mini me.
I shall call him mini me.
Mini Brawl.
I know last week we mentioned that Guard Convoy and yourself, you're going to ACON this coming weekend. And we're actually recording a day earlier than we normally do, so that's why you're able to actually join us and everything. But you're working on a Brawl costume for him, Fall of Cybertron Brawl?
War for Cybertron, Fall of Cybertron. As far as I'm aware, his model doesn't change. I'm actually using the War for Cybertron one because that's... I come from a community of people, and we collect game models. Hush, hush. But yeah, so I'm actually using the video game model of Brawl to build a costume. I wanted to have them done by BotCon. I picked up another job, so that was shot. And ACON is tomorrow, and I'm really struggling to try and finish him for that. And
you brought his head to BotCon, though. I actually wore it as a hat.
Yeah, I remember. I have those pictures. It's still unpainted. It hasn't really changed since then. But I just 5 minutes ago, as we were talking about what we picked up, I was setting the head on the chest, measuring the hole to cut my head in the chest. And I just assembled the chest as of like yesterday and today. I have to paint it. I think I still have to cut out the lower arms, and then I have to rig everything so that I can actually wear it and then paint. And then hopefully it'll be ready by tomorrow afternoon.
Well, good luck with that. I hope.
I gotta see pictures of this because that head is really small. I don't know how it's gonna fit on your head.
Really? You didn't watch me wearing it?
Oh, well, the head thing, but it didn't go all the way over your head.
She's a small person.
Yeah, that's because my head doesn't come all the way out of the chest because he's got such a huge chest.
Okay, so you'll be like peeking through the neck.
Well, yeah, my eyes are on either side of his mouth plate in his cheek, sort of.
Okay.
So the head itself is actually just resting on the top of her head, basically.
Pretty much.
It's a hat.
Yep, it is a hat. It's a
so basically
hat.
I was wearing it correctly at BotCon. It's just my head is much larger than yours. I'm a fat head.
You can't pull it down quite all the way.
You can't stick me on your wall, but I'm a fat head. Well, this week I picked up three figures. First one, I did a little bit of collector method. I hid a Voyager bulkhead the week prior. I know I mentioned it last week on the podcast, But I found Voyager bulkhead. I didn't have the cash on me to buy him, and plus I was working, and I didn't want to buy two toys and try to sneak them back into the plant where I work at whenever I came back in. So I hid him until this past week, and I picked him up, the Prime RID bulkhead. I know a lot of people hate on him for not being as cool as the first edition, but, you know, I never had the opportunity to own the first edition, so I really wasn't expecting much. And, you know, this guy, he's pretty awesome for what he is. I mean, I have messed with the first edition mold, because Insane Galvatron has it, and it is very impressive. And this figure here really doesn't stand in comparison when you compare it to that. But having not owned the first edition, I am perfectly happy with this figure. It is fantastic, in my opinion.
Yeah, at the end of the day, it's still the same mold.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of a little bit of red paint and an accessory. You know?
Well, and the only gripe I have about him, well, there's two, are the floating shoulder pads. They kind of get a little fiddly, and I wish the wheels would fold up a little bit better on his back to kind of give him a more cartoon-esque look. But aside from that, I think he's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I think the first edition does the torso better. He's got the you know, the stockier, more round look. You know, that one looks more like the, you know, the Muscle Beach guy, you know, with the large pecs and, you know, and like the headlights are down lower.
Look at my muscles.
Yeah, I mean, it's still a good looking
boy.
They are
big and large, like something else.
Yeah, yeah, I agree that the RD bulkhead is a good toy, and if we never had the first edition, I would probably love it. But yeah. I'm owning the first edition and just seeing how drastically different they transform, and I just think the first edition pulls off a better silhouette.
And yeah, he's really awesome. But the second figure I picked up, we went to a comic shop late last weekend, and this comic shop has quite a few Energon figures that are still sealed on the card. I guess a local collector had sold the collection to the comic shop, and they're selling them at somewhat higher prices. Well, I mean, considering Energon was what, 6-7 years ago now? Is that how long ago Energon was?
Energon was 2003, and it was Superlink 2002.
Was it that long? Wow. Yep. I guess it's longer than that. So it's almost 10-year-old toy. So yep. I don't feel so bad. I gave $22 for a Energon Sharkticon Mint on sealed card. And it is no longer sealed on the card because I wanted to play with it. And, you know,
to give you a retrospective, the 2007 movie was 5 years ago.
Yeah. That's mind blowing. Yeah.
So think about that. Just think about that. Far.
I can't believe that I've been an adult collector of Transformers for well over 12 years. I've been an adult collector for Transformers for at least, well, going on 13 years now. And I just can't believe it's been that long. I mean, I've been
collecting Transformers longer as an adult than I did as a kid.
Well, of course. I mean, as a kid, the whole Transformers line lasted for me barely over 5 years. I mean, I followed it as it was going into G2, but at that time, girls started looking a lot more appealing than neon-colored plastic toys. So I dropped what I was doing as far as toys were concerned and started chasing girls. but you know, as luck would have it, you know, I eventually got married and settled down, and my original collection turned up in a storage shed, and the rest is history. That was late 1999 whenever that happened, and at that time Beast Wars was still on the shelf, and I went nuts.
Yep.
And you know, here I am. I'd say probably close to 3,000 figures later. I don't have that many now because a couple of big sell-offs, but, you know, I've owned pretty much, if you can name a mold, I've probably owned it at one time or another. And that includes Generation 1, including figures like Deathsaurus and Victory Saber and everything. So I've owned them all. But there's a few, like Lyokaiser I haven't owned, a few others, but you know, something just keeps me coming back to the to it, and I love it so. And you know, this 10-year-old figure, you know, Energon Sharktacon, he's not a hugely great toy. He's really simple. I mean, but something about the color scheme on him, I really dig.
And I think what really won me over with him was how great his alt mode is, though.
Yeah, the shark.
Not only that, the rotating turrets, yeah, and the fact that those are articulated. Usually a lot of times the alt modes kind of get the short end of the stick, but in this case, that was an amazing alt mode.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I love
I used to always ask myself, like, that was one of the molds from that entire line that never got a repaint for the longest time. And it was just like, when is that going to happen? I remember when Landshark was announced, like, oh, that's going to definitely be the Sharktacon mold. And it wasn't, you know? And then when we finally got it with Sharktacon, and then then it started getting its mileage after Sharktacon, and then got the three repaints of the Troop Builders, and then we got the Arc Sharktacon from United.
Yeah.
But it's just like, not the Arc Sharktacon, excuse me, the Nemesis, not the Nemesis, the Axelon. There we go. So many different names. But it's just like, you know, that mold, man, I love that mold.
Yeah.
I
think the Skybite colors on that toy look the best. That blue they used is beautiful.
Well, I agree. The Skybite, it's Skybite, the shark mode fits it perfect. But, yeah. I mean, it's really awesome figure. I mean,
I never got that figure, and I've been disappointed in my entire collecting history not getting that figure.
He's definitely probably in my top three of the Energon toys, because there's a lot of Energon toys, especially the Autobots, that are kind of ho-hum, mm-hmm, but there's a lot of great Decepticon ones.
Well, I think the problem with Energon was, to me personally, a lot of it was very, I hate to say this, but it seemed very preschool-esque in the design.
You know what it was? They were coming out of the Armada era, which was very low-tier design. Seems like they really didn't know what, because this is when Armada was the ushering of Takara and Hasbro working side by side together, and it was kind of like Armada was just testing water with that, and then Energon was okay, we're getting a better idea. And I think the grand success was Galaxy Force, what we know as Cybertron. But Energon, it was like, we'll give you some stuff that fans want, but we're not too sure on the engineering yet. And we have all these gimmicks we have to appease with Energon chips and super linking or power linking gimmicks. And, you know, the Omnibot bots, what everyone has a universal peg joint so they can hold those weapons and all kinds of little things. And, I mean, some of the worst Transformer toys ever made, like, you know, Ironhide. Oh, God. Yeah. That overpriced.
Yeah, the best figures in that line were the ones that weren't part of the show.
We talked about Ironhide last week, how stupid it looked with that head, like, right there. It's like you just have an SUV with a giant robot head right on the top of it. I hate that toy, but I love it because, I mean, it had fun transformation. I have to admit, it had a fun transformation.
I think it was a Voyager toy that really should have been a deluxe.
Yeah.
Like, I think it was too expensive for what it was. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
More so.
But, I mean, I think the ultimate problem with, any Hasbro Transformer up until, well, even today, I mean, you got the Prime RID Voyagers that are hampered by the electronic gimmick, because it doesn't really work, you know, and the toy is hampered by it. Energon was the same way. I mean, you had the power linking gimmick. I mean, yeah, it was kind of cool, but at the same time, the individual figures were hampered by it. The power link, the cyber keys and Cybertron. Oh my gosh, don't even get me started on those things. I mean, especially like the Beast Wars Megatron, you know, stick the key in the ass of the T-Rex and shoot a missile. I mean, whose great idea was that? And, you know, I mean, that, as great as Hasbro is with, you know, creating these awesome toys that we love and everything, but, you know, there's something that third parties do that that Hasbro just can't. And speaking of third parties, that was the third item I finally received this week. I finally finished.
Before you get into that, I remembered one more thing I got.
And I already asked you. I'm going to slap you.
Well, the reason I forgot is because it was still sealed in the box. I haven't opened it yet. I picked up that leader Ironhide from Kmart.
Ah, yes.
The one I kept waiting to go on clearance, and it never did. It sold out and it was long gone, and so I bit the bullet and paid $40 for it.
Dark of the Moon?
Yes.
Good figure. Love that figure.
Well, I want it so I can, you know, kind of detail up the arms and legs, you know, look more metallic, and then rust the crap out of his chest.
And you want to? Do you want him to show him? Him to show you his cannons?
He already has multiple times.
That sounds perverted.
I got him with the Human Alliance basic, whirl and what is it? Backfire. I have backfire. As like the underslung gun, and then I have whirl. Yeah. Being held up in the air, it's his minigun.
Wow.
Nice. Yeah, I haven't opened him yet. I basically got him just to kitbash him because he'll make a more impressive rusted Ironhide custom than the Voyager that I used for the BotCon contest.
He'll make a better dead toy.
It'll make a better dead toy, yes. Well, he's got that big gimmick in the chest. I can just remove that gun.
And
he's got
a big hole in the chest. Hole. You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does work. Maybe it was intentional. Who knows?
Oh, that's hilarious.
But tangent aside, the third party figure I picked up was Structor. I finally finished Hercules after all this time. Granted, I mean he's an expensive figure. I don't have a whole lot of money to blow on toys at this time, due to personal reasons. But he's one figure I had to get because the aftermarket, once the third party Hercules is out of production, I scare to think. Of how expensive, insanely expensive he's going to be. And the people that are saying he's insanely expensive now, just look Wait. At your, yeah, look at City Commander armor at how much it's going for.
Shadow Scyther.
God bless. I mean, it's just amazing how
four digits.
Yeah. How much it goes up. And Hercules, he's going to be pushing 1,000, 2,000, I'd say. I would not be surprised. Simply because of how expensive he is now. And then, you know, third-party products are a niche market. There's not as many made of these as, say, you know, your RID figures, your typical Prime figures.
Leader Ironhide.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, there's not going to be as many of them. They're going to be worth something. I mean, I'm not saying that because I'm a collector that collects for value, but I'm saying it's
a lot. For
the
sake of your own wallet.
Well, for the sake of your own wallet, yeah. I know we were talking about this before we actually began recording the podcast, but, you know, if you think now, I would rather plunk down $600 now on Hercules than wait till next year whenever they've stopped making them and pay at least a $50 premium on each figure, you know, because, you know, after, I'd say immediately after they stop producing these toys, I wouldn't be surprised to see each figure individually bump up $50 initially. I mean, I think that's realistic. But then, you know, further down the road, you know, who knows? But anyway, Hercules, If you followed my DeviantArt account, I've posted up some pictures on there. If you're a member on TFW 2005, check out the Super Clear Pics thread. I'm Weird Wolf. I've posted a few pictures in there of Hercules and my Fans Project Insecticons with some Energon cubes. And I can't gush about third parties enough. But speaking about third parties and where I got my Structor from, I think this is a good way to segue to our sponsor, Captured Prey. I'd like to remind you that our friends at Captured Prey is your source for great toys and great prices and great service. You know, guys, I also heard that Captured Prey, that the third-party company, Renderform, will be unveiling something cool very soon. I'm going to keep checking Captured Prey out and find out what it is, you know.
Ooh, sounds interesting. I think I will, too. Also, be sure to head over there and pre-order Toy World Japan's Hegemon figure. Capture Prey is the only U.S.-based store to offer this great figure, and he's supposed to be released next week, so pre-order now.
That's right, IG. Captured Prey specializes in import Transformer figures from Japan and Asia, so not to mention other third-party figures, convention exclusives, and vintage items whenever possible. CapturedPrey.com. So, Proto Man, you want to tell us what you got this week?
A little bit of off-topic, a little bit of on-topic. Last weekend that just passed, I came from Anime North Toronto, which is like one of the biggest anime conventions in all of North America, really. It's pretty crazy. Transformer-related, I picked up Human Alliance Leadfoot, who's been sparsely showing up in Canada all over the place, but not in the States. Another one of those weird, like,
yeah.
It shows up in Canada, but not in the States. Because, like, Dark of the Moon got canceled. But yet, like, you know, like some of the toys are still showing up in Hong Kong, and then they show up in a Marshalls in the States, or, you know. And so for some weird reason, some of the Zellers that have been closing up, which is a Canadian line, a Canadian store, has Leadfoot. So I was like, hey, pick that up. What else did I get? I got a whole bunch of G1 Junkers, because I usually go to garage sales and stuff and pick up this and that, and you know, nothing really worth mentioning. Oh, hey, beat up Power Master Optimus Prime. That's only the cab. Oh, hey, slag that's seen better days, you know.
I never find beat up G1s at yard sales.
Really? Well, I still once in a while find them quite a bit, actually.
Last time you went yard sailing.
Yeah.
Last time I went all the time in my truck, and I slow down and I look. You know, for toys.
That's not yard sailing.
No, I'm kind of in the same boat as him. It's more so where it's like I'm already going to Toys R Us, and then I see a sign, and it's like, what does it hurt, you know, to go check? So, and not to mention you find other stuff too. So, I was at Anime North, and so there was a lot of all kinds of stuff there, and so I was just picking up all kind. Again, because I live in Quebec, I made the trip to Toronto, an English speaking city. And so there was a whole bunch of toys that just never showed up in Quebec. So I picked up, like, I wanted to, for some odd reason, I had to get the Jazzwear Mortal Kombat Ninjas. I don't know why. Even though to a lot of people they're very ugly, those toys. But I loved the Mortal Kombat Ninjas as a kid, so I just wanted to have that box set of them with all their rainbow goodness. I also picked up the Rita Repulsa from the Power Rangers Samurai series, because I just wanted to have Rita Repulsa, because she never got a proper toy ever. In anything Sentai or Power Rangers related. What else did I pick up? A lot of weird things here and there. I went to one, you know, there's all kinds of art booths at these anime conventions, similar to what Cali of Puggleformers does. There's always a lot of people that do a lot of handmade and handcrafted stuff at these kind of conventions. And someone did something similar to what is Mighty Mugs. But she did it with cats, and then she did it of Transformer characters, and they were really cheap. So I picked up the Optimus and Bumblebee that she did. And I'd like to take photos of that and show that to people one day. But it's real, really cool stuff that she did. And she did it of like everything, like X-Men characters and all of that. What else? A lot of video game stuff, but that's really not worth mentioning. It's just like, because I love collecting vintage games. So,
well, hence your username.
My screen name, yeah. Guess what my favorite video game series is? Kirby. No.
Mario.
Yeah, Mario. No.
I think I introduced Insane Galvatron the other day. I still have my original NES with the original box and everything. Still have the original receipt for that system.
Wow.
And I have...
I'm surprised how much that's worth with even the receipt. That's like crazy.
And I mean, the case is very yellowed, obviously. It's an 80s... plastic, but I mean it still functions. And one of the first games I showed him was Mega Man 2.
Nice. And that's the best one in my opinion.
Yeah, I love Mega Man 2. And then I didn't show you Mega Man 3, did I?
No, you just played some Mega Man 2 for a while.
Yeah, and I just got to, you know, I went to Metal Man first, then to and
yeah, there you go, and then you get the metal cutter, yeah. And then you're set for the rest of the game.
I think I showed him what the goodness is at Mega Man. I mean, I just got so hooked on that game.
It's art. It really
awesome.
Is.
Awesome.
I sorry to knock you off topic there. What else did I get? Oh, God. I think, I don't remember if it was last week or the week before. Because, I mean, it all kind of merges with me every weekend. Every weekend I hit up Toys R Us, and it's always like, if I can't pass up Cyberverse stuff. I constantly like that. I think it was this week or last week I picked up the Cyberverse Commanders. They finally started showing up in my area. So Optimus, Bulkhead, Starscream, and Megatron. I think it was last week, yeah.
You must picked get Dreadwing.
That's the one I want more than all of them, because that one, like, you know, that's a character. I think that's one of those characters in the show that really appeals to me more than anyone else. And I'd really like Dreadwing, and so that's the toy I'd really like to get. And,
he's fap-worthy.
I guess so.
Dude robots.
Yeah, if you're into that. If you're into dude robots
that.
Painted like Depth Charge, you know. But it's he's just one of those Cyberverses that also really looks nice. He gets across his weapon and just the details in the face for something that's that price point, that small. It doesn't really have to get those details. They could have put a blotch of yellow and call it a day, you know. But
or Ratchet.
I mean, or Ratchet, yeah, exactly. You know, or the Viacons too, even those are pretty good for what they are. But it's just, I'm trying to remember what else, because usually all that stuff is opened up and already on display, and so it's all meshed in with everything else right now. I believe that's it, because it was a pretty, because when I usually go to conventions like that, I kind of don't go too crazy in the dealer room. Because an anime convention, it's not really about the merch. It's about the cosplay and the characters of the people that are there and, you know, just enjoying the experience and going to the panels and stuff. And Anime North, for anyone who's ever been to that, there's probably some listeners who are big anime fans that live on the border. That's like, that show is nuts. That show is, there's just as many people outside that convention in cosplay as there is inside that convention. And it's one of those things that you go there with your camera and just take a lot of pictures of really funny people.
No, you know, we did a little post-BotCon discussion in our first reboot episode when we became TFYLP. We talked about cosplay at BotCon. I mean, it's sadly underdeveloped at BotCon. I think FunPub doesn't handle it very well. And hopefully next week we can discuss about it at TFCon.
I actually wrote an article, I think it was about a year ago, talking about the history of cosplay and BotCon. Because obviously the cosplay boom started after the 2007 movie. And thankfully due to the female fandom being the large push of bringing it in. But prior to the female fandom bringing it in 2007... one of the first cosplay guys was a guy named Joe Ibe. And the Metal Hawk toy that we got from BotCon is actually a homage to him. Because he was the first guy ever to cosplay at a BotCon. He cosplayed in 1996, and he came dressed as Metal Hawk.
Oh, wow.
And
wow.
If you Google it, he's a fat guy. That's kind of also why Metal Hawk is so... Well, yeah. The toy. He's someone who doesn't exactly pull off Metal Hawk.
I think I know who you're talking about.
You probably have seen the photos, you know. But he was one of the first guys to do that. And he did Metal Hawk, and then another year he did Optimus Prime. Another year he did Saber, like just the smaller robot of Star Saber.
I know who you're talking about, yep.
Is he the one who did the Optimus Prime that we've all seen the picture of? We're like the fat guy.
Yeah, we've all seen the picture of. Yeah, that's him. That's Joe Ibe. And he did. There's also others. He did Rekgar, which actually transformed. Like he did quite a few, and this was like the mid 90s, late 90s, where it just was really uncommon to see that at BotCon, especially when BotCon was in an infancy and it usually had max 500 people, let alone someone who showed up in a costume. So he was one of the first dudes to do that, and it's actually kind of a shame how BotCon. Yeah, what are you gonna say?
His Optimus Prime costume that everybody's seen that picture of that we all thought was like the most horrible Optimus Prime costume ever.
It's actually very good.
Yes, because I picked up this was something else I got, but I think I mentioned it last week. I bought the entire G1 U.S. Marvel run of comics in all very fine condition, and I was going through reading, and I was actually reading the digital versions I have, and in one of the first three or four issues, there's a guy dresses up as Optimus Prime and kind of walks into like a bar or something to scare one of his buddies. And he takes off. He's standing there and he's kind of fat, and his costume looks just like that guy's costume from the picture.
See, and that's the irony in it is that when that Metal Hawk toy came out, everyone was hating on it. I'm like, dude, that's a homage to Joe Ibe. You don't understand. Like Pete Sinclair remembers Joe from back in the day too. Like – it's totally, that's why like everyone's like, oh, it doesn't look like Metal Hawk. That's not the point. It's supposed to be an overweight Metal Hawk, you know, who had too much energy on, you know, because Joe Ives at, you know, Metal Hawk looked exactly like that. And this is what you were referring to, that I believe it's issue number, I want to say issue number 7 of the original Marvel run, where the dude goes into the bar to scare his buddy, and that's totally like the picture almost, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, he looked just like that picture. I was like, wow. All of a sudden, you know, that picture is not as...
That costume was not so terrible after all.
All of a sudden, all the fans making fun of him are small time compared to him. It's like, you didn't read issue number 7 of Marvel, and you said you were a fan. Yeah. Making fun of me.
Fail. Yeah. Oh.
But yeah, that's pretty much all I got. Yeah.
This week in the news, you know, we talked about this a little bit last week in the podcast. The Masterpiece 12 Sideswipe. We had some speculation as to what the, I know Guard Convoy got quite adamant, and it's sad that he couldn't be with us tonight. Quite adamant that the silhouette that we saw was not Soundwave. It is not Soundwave. There's no way it's Soundwave. Look at it. It's a robot turned around backwards. And guess who it is?
Soundwave.
Soundwave. Yeah. We're getting a Masterpiece Soundwave. Oh, yes.
And I'll tell you why. And this is very important. And it's the same reason why we're getting Sideswipe. Engineering these molds are expensive. A lot more. I mean, Hasbro already tells us the reason why we get repaints to begin with is to make back the costs on engineering a mold. And this is coming from a deluxe to a mini-con. When you're talking a Masterpiece toy that's engineered by Takara Tomy, and on top of that, the guys who work on the engineering of Masterpiece toys are actually big-name mecha designers, Kunio Ono, or guys who worked on Macross and stuff like 83 Gundam. These are guys who are also higher paid designers. These are big name dudes. And when they're brought in to do this stuff, Takara and Hasbro have to right away consider how to get back their money on the mold. So when they decide characters, obviously one of the first things that hearken to them is what we could do and what could be the following repaints from it. Obviously, something like Megatron was a hiccup along the way that they haven't really been able to make their money back from. But other things like, you know, Convoy or Rodimus, even to get a black repaint out of it, or you know, a comic repaint from Grimlock, they will do whatever they can to get that repaint. And of course, also the American releases count as another repaint too. So, I mean, Sideswipe, considering all the repaints that are related to that, whether it be, you know, Tiger Tracks,
Red Alert, which we're getting.
Red Alert. Well, that's MP12A. Red Alert. Red Alert being like the idiot-proof one, practically. I mean, that's the obvious one that's going to come from it. But the thing that I'm trying to get to with that is the choice and the reason why Soundwave even is happening is because of the cleverness that could go with this. You're going to have an MP13 Soundwave that's going to come with, let's say, Laserbeak and Ravage. Then you're going to have Sound Blaster. Now, people are going to be like, well, I'm not going to buy Sound Blaster. I have Soundwave. But, oh, I'm sorry. Don't you want Buzzsaw and Rumble? Aw, crap. Now I got to buy Sound Blaster. Okay, and then we're going to do the other Soundwave. We're going to do Soundwave the White Noise, meaning the white repaint, which is a homage to the iPod one and the Shattered Glass character. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not going to buy that. It's stupid. I don't like Shattered Glass.
Don't you want Rat
don't
Bat?
You want, don't you want Frenzy to complete your Rumble and Rat Bat? I get a feeling that's what's going to happen.
Kind of like they did with the Encores. They got me to buy Twin Cast and Sound Blaster again just for the tapes.
Exactly, and that's probably the most logical reason why, because there's at least three repaints out of it, and there's a big incentive for people to then buy those repaints. Not everyone who bought Masterpiece Grimlock said, I gotta get that comic book edition for the crown. You know, like, not everyone was hell-bent on those kind of things. Same thing even with the Rodimus, with the E-Hobby Black repaint. There wasn't so much of a reason to pick it up, but this is for any, you know, even the most casual collector who only collects, like the guy who collects only Masterpiece toys, You know, he's going to want to get every Masterpiece tape cassette. And
well, I think that's another draw, is that not only are we going to get a Masterpiece Soundwave, but this also means more than likely we're going to get Masterpiece cassettes as well.
Hasbro has had many years now to perfect making that perfect Ravage, whether it be the one that came with Universe 2.0 Hound or the USB. You know, like there's been time to figure out how to take that, you know, 2x4 shape of a cassette and see how much kibble we could pull out of it. I know that BTS Toys recently did a really amazing Rat Bat.
Oh yeah,
we've
got that actually.
Yeah, I mean just using that as an example of what a third party company was able to flesh out from that again 2x4 shape of plastic. So, you know, when you have the Masterpiece budget, which luckily has no cap at all, it's only whatever it costs is whatever it costs, you can only imagine how good the Ravage will be or the, you know, the Laserbeak. I mean, and not to mention the original G1 toys, like Laserbeak, was pretty spot on to begin with. But we'll get some little extra details with that. Maybe an Energon cube for Soundwave to come out of his chest. Who knows? Oh, you know,
it's scary.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. Like, it's, you know, we're going to have a Rumble and Frenzy that might actually have PAL drivers this time, you know, or maybe something. Like, it's definitely something that we're going to want to be posted on, because that's something that's really – and that's the whole logic behind it, where, I mean, a lot of people are always like, you know, well, they want jazz. But then what do you do with jazz? You have jazz, okay. But then what are you going to do?
Stepper,
mm-hmm. Vroom, vroom, you know? Like, I mean, there's only
And what about the BotCon characters that we have now? I mean, you can easily repaint those.
A lot, but the answer is a lot of these repaint ones, they go to the Japanese market. It's not like we get them. So a lot of times those repaints, with the exception of the Grimlock, are usually catered towards Japanese fandom. So stuff like Vroom, that's why I said Vroom Vroom and Stepper, because those were Japanese market exclusive characters. Where something like BotCon stuff is not so much. I mean, it's pretty difficult for an American to get a BotCon exclusive. Imagine a Japanese person. So it's something that's probably not something that is up their alley. But
yeah, well, I don't want to totally ignore the other Masterpiece too. The alternate coloration of Sideswipe, the Red Alert. I want to speak a little bit about him too. You know, like you said earlier, it's a no-brainer.
Will he be toy colors or anime colors?
I'm hoping anime.
Here's another thing that also crossed my mind, because the whole concept of Masterpiece has always been the emphasis on taking that G1 toy and making it, you know, all the animation designs have always been different than how the toy looks from G1, because of how Fleur O'Deary, the Filipino designer who worked at Sunbrow at the time, he simplified the designs. And so Masterpiece kind of went on that hell-bent journey to try to make them as show accurate as possible in robot mode. You know, whether it be like, you know, how Prime could tuck in and make his waist slimmer and stuff. And even Rodimus did a very good, you know, getting rid of that wheel kibble on his legs that the original G1 toy had. But here's where it gets interesting, because Fleur O'Deary, what he did was, when it came to characters that shared the same mold, whether it be a hoist or Inferno to a grapple, he always made sure that there were, even though the toy had the exact same mold and in toy form and would be blatantly a repaint, he would do something a little extra with the show design to make them completely different. So in the case of Sideswipe was very clean cut, very nice. But if you look at Red Alert's show design, he actually looks like his G1 toy. The kibble is very present, the big wheels on the legs and the arms. Mm-hmm. And he did that on purpose to differentiate the two characters. So if they were ever standing next to each other, they would look like two separate characters. So what I ask myself is, Masterpiece is all about show accuracy. We already saw the Sideswipe gray scales, and some people did some Photoshops of colors. And it looks like they're doing a very good job at matching that Fleur O'Deary show design for Red Alert, for Sideswipe. Now, is there going to be any twists and turns a la Rodimus, where, you know, you pull this and you twist that and you get something that then looks more like Red Alert in the show? Like, you know, something that has that, hey, now it looks kind of show accurate in that way? I don't know. I mean, that's just a speculation.
They're not. They're doing that not just in Masterpiece, but I mean, look at the Generations Tracks mold, for example. How many exactly. different ways can you position the wheels on the shoulders and the backpack?
Another good example
just
of that.
Give it a completely different look.
You take Cyclonus from the Classics line or Generations, and it's like he could hold his gun like a American Target Master, or he could hold his gun like a Japanese Target Master. You know, appeasing to both markets, where he had like Mega Man style, as I call it, where mm-hmm. it's an arm cannon. You know, so it's one of those things that I'm pretty sure they're probably considered because of what the purpose of the Masterpiece line is to achieve that perfection as much as they can. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do with that.
Just like a couple extra steps of transformation work in the engineering.
Or maybe even lack of transformation. Maybe like, you know, because again, the whole point of Red Alert is not tucking in those wheels, is like having that kibble on the arms. So I can only, maybe it's something where you don't transform the arms completely and tuck away, you know, the sides of the Lambo. You know, it'll be interesting.
That's what I'm thinking is, you know, the ability to do it will be there. It's just in the instructions. They'll say, well, for, you know, for Red Alert, they won't be in the instructions to fold the panels away.
To achieve a perfect Red Alert, you must do this, you know, like, yeah.
What's your thoughts on the new Masterpieces?
Well, Red Alert was expected, I think, when, you know, it's just the obvious repaint. But to find out it was Soundwave, I just really hope that we get them here. You know, I hope that Masterpiece, you know, Hasbro keeps releasing the Masterpiece in America because, man, Soundwave is just, you can't help but love Soundwave. He's just one of those iconic characters from.
If we got Rodimus and Thundercracker coming, and we'll get Soundwave. Soundwave is so high tier, so like the most casual jock guy in college remembers the dude with the tapes in his chest, you know?
Yeah.
Where they probably won't remember Rodimus. You know, they'll remember the dude who was a dinosaur, you know, and he combined and fought those Constructobots, you know, like that guy will still remember Soundwave. You know, remember the dude with the crazy voice and he had the dog that came out of his chest? What was his name? Soundtape? You know? Like but that Soundwave is so high tier on even the most vaguest memory, it would be foolish for Hasbro not to use it.
And I think it's important to note that, you know, we've heard Hasbro say before that Soundwave, the reason they haven't made Soundwave a tape deck for the main line and everything is because people just wouldn't recognize a tape deck nowadays. And that's just a blanket statement I think a lot of people overlook. It's not that nobody would recognize what is a tape deck and what are cassette tapes. There obviously are people out there that know what these things are. But what Hasbro's saying is that the target market for these toys, these mass release toys, like animated Soundwave, for example, he was a vehicle, you know, the target market for these was kids. Kids nowadays, honestly, they don't know what a tape deck is.
They know what a keytar is for some
exactly.
reason.
They might not know what a keytar is, but it's
joking.
Recognizable. I mean, it's a guitar or something, you know.
Yeah,
it's a guitar.
Yeah.
Do you think Hasbro or Takara might do something like they're doing with the Generations Fall of Cybertron Soundwave, where they release Soundwave with one of his minions and then release the other minions separately?
I think that with the what'll happen is what's always happened so far is the Takara release is one thing, but usually we kind of get the better end of the deal where we're going to get a little extra somewhere. I think what might happen is, like, while you'll have to probably get multiple Soundwaves, like the different kinds of repaints to get all the cassettes, this is just my speculation, but I think the Hasbro release is probably going to give us a lot more. We'll probably get maybe like all four in one shot, or maybe it'll be an SDCC thing, kind of like how Rodimus first debuted at SDCC before he became a Toys R Us exclusive. So like something like that I can imagine happening, because also you have to realize these two guys here, Sideswipe and Soundwave, they're a lower price point than usual. So it means that they will be a little smaller, but it also means that there will also be more acceptable in the price point that Rodimus already is in, because Rodimus is a larger figure and he's in that price point and he has those accessories, where Soundwave is smaller, so they could still have Soundwave in that same price point but give him more junk to make up for it. You know what I mean? Which would be the more cassettes.
Well, going back to finish my statement, though, you know, Hasbro said as a blanket statement that kids don't know what a tape deck is. But the thing is, we as collectors do, because we're old enough to. Or, you know, we may not have grown up with them, but we're still old enough to know what they were, because, you know, it wasn't that long ago, really. And that's why I can see, you know, them releasing a Masterpiece Soundwave here in the United States, because the Masterpiece line, like you were mentioning before, is geared toward the collector market.
Yeah,
I don't know if you mentioned that in the podcast or in the pre-chat show chat, but that's the whole thing for Masterpieces. They are geared toward the collector market. We are a niche market. We are old enough to know what a tape deck is. That appeals to us. And like you said, that college guy he was that blue tape deck dude that had the dog pop out of his chest. People remember that. He's still a recognizable character.
And they might even make
character.
That impulse buy. You know, that's the thing, too. Yeah. I see that at conventions all the time, where they'll make that impulse buy based on that sliver of nostalgia that still creeps in the back of their mind. And Soundwave is just one of those characters it's like him, Starscream, Constructicons, Megatron, Bumblebee, and Soundwave. Those guys are the guys that the most vague – I mean, we're talking before the 2007 movie even made this mainstream. Even the most vaguest fan that remembers it from their childhood at least remembers those characters.
You know?
And Soundwave is way on top of that list, like even above Megatron practically.
Yeah, I think there's two characters you remember from G1 that, you know, someone who hasn't been in the fandom, they're going to remember Optimus Prime and Soundwave.
Yeah,
because Soundwave was just that iconic.
Megatron, the gun guy.
The voice. Soundwave almost transcends Megatron, because he was that guy with the voice. He was that guy with the tapes. You know, it's just, there was just something so iconic and memorable of it that he just sums up what was your childhood in the 80s. Where, yeah, Megatron was the dude who turned into the gun, and he had the scratchy voice. But then so was Starscream, the guy with the scratchy voice. We just remembered, it's like, guy who turns into the gun, guy who turns into the plane that was an asshole, you know, guy who had the tapes in his chest, dinosaur guy who was leader who turned into truck, guy who was the little yellow Volkswagen Beetle. Like, that's, you know, just that's the – but those are the most memorable characters of Transformers. Everything else is kind of second tier, even Jazz or Shockwave. Everything kind of is under those key dudes.
Which is why Masterpiece still appeals to the collector market, because we know those characters.
Oh, yeah.
And they're making them for us, and that's what's cool.
I remember when the people I work with in my new job, I'm a truck driver, when they found out I was going to a Transformers convention, and they're like, oh, you're into Transformers? I remember that one guy turned into a gun. You have that one?
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. And that's how they get remembered. It's not so much the names, but those iconic alt modes and little quirks about them.
And, you know,
which made Transformers such a mainstay.
You touch on something there. You say they don't always remember the name. While that's true, honestly, I think a lot of people do remember the name Megatron, Optimus Prime, Starscream. I think they do remember it. It's just that to them,
well,
you know,
they're not as
inclined to it as we are as collectors. You know, we don't have a problem admitting we're a collector. Most of us don't. Don't have a problem admitting to our friends or coworkers that we're collectors. But yet you have Joe Schmo out on the street or a coworker, they don't actively seek out toys and everything, but they do remember Transformers. They do remember Megatron. It's just a politically correct thing. They don't admit that they remember Megatron and they remember his name. You know, so
oh yeah, that gun guy.
Yeah, that gun guy.
If I know the toy's name, I'll be a big nerd.
Yeah,
he was
exactly.
one of those Chinese cartoons, right?
Yeah, yeah. He they say that gun guy because they don't want to be labeled as the nerd that remembers. Yeah. You know, I think
actually
that's
it was Megatron from the 1984 line originally.
Yeah. Well, I don't think they know that much, but I think they do remember certain names.
I'd give them credit if they did.
But
then I can vouch for, you know, the popularity of Soundwave coming from a costuming perspective, because he's not only very popular as a character that people want to do, but he also happens, because we actually recommend him as a first time thing because he's so simple. But
yes, blocky.
Between him and Starscream, I mean, you come look at the directory on Transcostumers, and there's got to be like 10 at least that are like you know, recent, and you know there's people. I mean, that's like all G1. I mean, some people are starting to get into Prime and attempting to do designs from that, but some of these people, they come in from an anime, you know, cosplay background, and you know, I want to do a character. I had this many characters as ones I wanted to do. Maybe, you know, maybe Starscream or Bumblebee or whatever, and then Soundwave. And then we'll always say Soundwave is really easy because he's boxy. So if Soundwave is in that list, we usually recommend him, and he's usually in the list.
Yeah, people gravitate to that, obviously. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but it's Soundwave is so iconic, and to just discount him as something that people wouldn't recognize. I think a lot of people get enraged by that statement simply for the fact that they don't understand the statement. And this is a perfect example and well, not living proof, but I mean visual proof that they do know that we do remember Soundwave as a tape deck. But just throwing this out there, playing devil's advocate, seeing as how masterpieces are so intricate and everything, and it's very doable, but it may drive up the price point just a bit, but I can see how they could do it very cheaply as well. Do you think that there's any possibility that they could put some kind of MP3 functionality into the Soundwave?
Being a music label owner of it, it's totally doable because of the way – because here's the thing about Soundwave. The G1 toy pretty much got it right the first time. And you see how much space is in that chest, you know what I mean, to have the battery pack or the gimmicks or whatever. So it's totally, totally, totally doable. But at the same time, you know, it's one of those things that, like, yeah, they could do it. But, yeah, devil's advocate, it would totally put up the price.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, I could see them releasing a version of it in Japan. You know, like they got the Dead Convoy, the Black Optimus Prime Death Mode or whatever it was called. I could see them releasing a version of this toy with that functionality. There's no way we would get it here in the U.S. because it's just not cost effective. But me personally, I could see them doing it.
Kind of like they did the iPod Soundwave. They could totally, you know, as Proto Man mentioned earlier, the obvious repaints, one of them being the white version of Soundwave, maybe that one have a little higher price tag with working, you know, MP3 player.
Also, the thing that worries me is when you put an iPod gimmick. I know that when Bumblebee had they had that Beatmix Bumblebee that had an iPod gimmick in it, it kind of left the toy aisle of, say, of a Toys R Us, and it always ended up in the R-Zone electronic aisle. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think it would also be kind of dangerous to put that kind of gimmick in it, because then it might not be in the Transformers section per se. It'll be with the iDogs and the, you know, all that other.
Yeah. Or next iPod. You know, the Best Buy exclusive or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That I think that's kind of also the risk of doing something like that, is now it's not so much a toy but a musical accessory.
At least in North America, anyway. Which, you know, since you're here and. I'm not really clear as, I mean, obviously I don't live in Canada. How are the masterpieces in Canada? Do you even get them, or do you have to come over here to get them?
Because the thing is, in Canada you have the majority of it, which is English-speaking Canada, which is 90% of the provinces.
Then you, have Quebec.
Quebec. yeah, and unfortunately, I live in Quebec. So how it works is because masterpieces are English-only packaging, they have a strong presence in the English-speaking market, and 90% of the masterpieces have been Toys R Us exclusives, with the exception of Skywarp, and I believe Starscream was also Walmart, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So with the exception of those two, they've all been store exclusives. They've all been store exclusives, but most of them Toys R Us. And Toys R Us is very adamant on just one, when it's an exclusive, one language. Don't waste your time with doing the trilingual packaging. So as a result, Quebec gets screwed with that. I know that when the masterpiece Rodimus has come out, when they came out, I asked Gog Dog from WTF at TFW, hook me up with three of them. You know, like, I knew that there was no way that I were going to find them locally here, where stuff like Skywarp and Starscream, they did show up here. But they also, because they were Walmart exclusives, and Walmart is a more powerful and broad company, they were able to say, we want trilingual packaging. Make it happen. You know, so that's always the case with a lot of store exclusives in general. When a store exclusive does come out, usually it has one language packaging, and so only a small section of Canada does get screwed over in the end. But that's the beauty of the internet and eBay.
Well, it's like I think last week we were briefly mentioning how the UK tends to get screwed a lot on their releases.
Oh, well, they get screwed just because of how case assortments work with them and stuff. It's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah, I mean, it's just foolish.
Yeah.
Amazon.com and GameStop have revealed their pre-order bonuses for Fall of Cybertron. That's me. You want to tell us a little bit about those?
Woo! Finally! I'm just glad that they finally told us what it is, because they kept teasing us about it, just like they're teasing about the multiplayer stuff being revealed at E3. Right, the reveals. We have for Amazon.com, we have G2 Colors Bruticus for single player. Yeah, he looks a lot like toys, except he's got the camo colors going on. So it's not just a solid color. He's got the fun camo stripe wiggly squiggles. Yeah. Also, what else did we have for the GameStop? GameStop's the other one. GameStop's always the other one. Now I'm having trouble finding it there. There we go.
GameStop,
well,
G1 Retro.
It's in the chat, too.
Okay. Yeah, it's right. That's G1 Optimus Prime. It looks spectacular in the screenshots they have. It fits in actually very well. he doesn't look really out of place, besides the fact that if you're thinking, oh, this is on Cybertron, and that's the Earth
it's Marvel.
Truck.
It's,
and he even transforms into a semi-truck on that as well.
Yeah, the flat nose.
What we're saying, the very first episode of the original cartoon, he had that robot mode even on Cybertron.
Yeah, Marvel didn't care. They're it was Marvel Production
Sunbow,
Studios.
Yeah.
Sunbow, yeah. They were like, whatever, okay. Yeah, so technically, it's Sunbow and Cybertron.
I am such a G1er that I will pre-order it from GameStop just to get that skin.
Yeah, and that one, while the Bruticus one is single player only, the Optimus Prime skin is single player and multiplayer. And that's not all that you get when you pre-order from GameStop. You get not only Optimus, but you also get a Megatron pistol gun, so I'm assuming it's a weapon, and a Shockwave blast cannon. What I'm betting is that they'll both be available in the Teletran weapons, like, screen when you can upgrade stuff. I'm sure that you can probably buy quote-unquote weapons there as well, so I'm sure it will be in the list there. Those are both single-player only, unfortunately.
What I kind of hope for, actually, with this, too, is just like the other skins where you could change the colors with the G1 Prime, we could get an Ultra Magnus up in this, we could get a Nemesis Prime, we could get a Shining Magnus, which was the yellow repaint. Let's go for Bape Optimus, the green one. You know, I mean, I could go on and on, but, you know, like, I mean, that it also adds that, you know, you could have those other characters, too.
The Best Buy exclusive should be Urban Camo Ruination. for
seriously. they'll do like some like yeah, Valdigus.
Battle Gaia.
Yeah, Battle Gaia or something. Something really obscure just to show that Best Buy is like all with it, you know.
Hey, we're cool. We're hip.
The only thing that bothers me about this, and it's just me being so nitpicky, is that like I know that a lot of like the Lego games and stuff like that, when they do pre-order bonuses and everything, specifically with GameStop, they always do like keychains or like they do the Lego toys and everything. And I know that War for Cybertron in the UK, when you pre-ordered it from in the UK and in Canada, we have GameStop. But they also have a sister company called EB Games, Electronic Boutique.
We have those here as well.
Oh, you have them too? Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Perfect. All right. So I'm not crazy. but in the UK exclusively, when you pre-ordered War for Cybertron, the original High Moon game, you got a exclusive Starscream Legends toy. And what it was is they took the Cybertron Legends Starscream, but they painted it up to look more like his War for Cybertron colors. It's exactly just that same mold, but and that was a little bonus. And to me, it's still like, oh man, all these like, you know, because the thing is with these bonuses, you totally know, just like before, they're going to be something you could buy later from the PS3 mm-hmm. store. You know what I mean?
But I don't feel so bad about these since most of them are single player only.
Oh yeah. Well, it's not only that. Hey, you get it for free. I mean, you're going to buy the game anyways. At least it's nice to get something for free. But it's just, it's one of those things where, I mean, if whatever it is, if the second there's the one that's like, hey, you pre-order from us and you'll get a Legends Ironhide done in this, that's the one, sadly, that I will gravitate towards because, like, I always like the physical stuff when it comes to those pre-order incentives. Like, because it's becoming an ongoing trend now that pre-order incentives are in-game digital stuff. It's like, you know, pre-order now and get big head mode or, you know, like there's always stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Or if I remember correctly, like there was a big thing with Arkham Asylum with Batman, you know, with the Catwoman mode and all of that.
Which I totally screwed up.
If we're lucky, we'll get to the point where Transformers games will have a collector's edition and then we'll get, you know, collector's edition Bruticus in a box set with, you know, a comic and, just something amazing and a bunch of physical stuff.
Totally, because that's what I would like to see.
I am surprised that we don't see like an SDCC exclusive, or I'm not just saying SDCC, I'm just using that as an example, but like an SDCC exclusive, you got this big fancy box for Bruticus. Why not include the game with it?
Is the game going to be out by then?
Well, it's probably not. No. Probably
no,
not.
No, it's not, because it's before TFCon.
Why not have like a version of, say, Bruticus? You could get, I think, didn't they say at BotCon that they're going to have like a gift set of Bruticus available at mass retail, like Walmart?
They said that it will be a store exclusive. They didn't say which one, but it's still, they're saying they're playing with the idea, because first they want to see how he sells at SDCC, that's scary to think about. Mm. Because it's like
that's not a good gauge, no.
Yeah, exactly. That's not the best way to do it.
Let's see how a Transformers toy sells at a comic.
At a convention that has a very limited amount of people, you know. I don't think I've never heard of a SDCC exclusive selling out, ever. Even like stuff that like the Soundwave, you know, something that you would expect. Oh, hey, even the casual SDCC comic book goer would know that character. Nothing ever sells out there. And it always ends up.
You can pick that thing up months later for cheap.
A lot cheaper too.
Well,
so.
Can't you still get the first edition Deluxe Prime on the Hasbro Toy Shop side?
Well, it's not only that too. Like, it's just what I'm worried about is that Bruticus that they're selling. That's going to be expensive. That box is pretty elaborate. You know, it's one's going to be like, I'm going to take a shot in the dark, say like $69 to $80. You know,
we knew that anyway, just because of how many figures you're getting into.
Oh yeah, figures, but only like I remember, like they were at BotCon, they were talking about how crazy the box is and how it's like it opens like this and then it opens like that and then it slides out, and I'm like, oh man, packaging equals price, you know. Like, second you put a foam insert, you know, you're talking another $40, you know. So,
The figures, five deluxes at retail are $65, so the box
exactly
has to be that.
And then the box is going to be another chunk of money. So, that's going to be probably even more than what I estimated.
But, you know, bottom line is what I was getting at was, you know, there's like collector's editions. You know, for example, you know, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3, you could or Black Ops. You got a RCXD, an actual remote control car. Granted, it's cheap. But you got an actual remote control car, a little art booklet, a medal, a big fancy packaging along with the game. I don't understand why we can't get like a collector's edition of Transformers Fall of Cybertron with Bruticus.
Yeah,
a Bruticus toy.
Because Activision doesn't think that it's popular enough that it will sell in stores. Because because collector's editions they go to clearance actually really fast. They expect you to pre-order and buy all those, within like the first maybe 3 months, and then after that the stores are going to start pushing it. Like if there's something like Star Wars: The Old Republic, they had collector's editions. Like I think it came out October or November. And there are collector's editions. I saw them on clearance in January.
Oh, yeah. And it's something that you go into stuff like a GameStop or like an EB Games, and you look at like the top railing of the store, like the top, and you'll see all the old collector's editions that didn't sell. Oh, hey, Tron is still here. You know, oh, hey, Duke Nukem is still here. Like the big expensive boxes of whatever that just didn't sell out.
And they're like, If the Old Republic can't sell out of collector's edition, what do you think Transformers is going to do?
Oh yeah, of course. And Transformers is really banking on its fandom, and a couple of guys who still haven't jumped on the bandwagon yet. You know, like according to gamers, the game is an okay game in comparison to other stuff that you could be playing at the same time. I mean, for us, it's a Transformer game. That's all it needs to be. It just needs to be a good Transformer game. But for a casual gamer, it's not something that's going to take them away from their Call of Duty. You know, like, oh man, I've been totally way, because it's a franchise that people are into it because of the characters. Call of Duty, they're into it because of the gameplay. And so they're more so waiting for that. You know, and so it did successful. Don't get me wrong. It made money, the game, but it's a lot smaller market.
But you don't think the fact that it aimed at collectors would push it?
You guys, let him speak.
Oh, sorry. I was going to say, but you know, if they would just, like, even if it was a collector's edition exclusive to, say, Amazon.com that came with Bruticus, and it was $150, that would be something I could see making sense. I would totally do it.
Yeah.
I could see Amazon pulling it off because Amazon are the kings of clearance. So if push came to shove for clearance, they could do it. Where I'd be more hesitant for a store that has to keep stock that takes shelf space. You know what I mean? Because again, that would be a big, you know, special edition. That'd be something like big as a Skylanders box or something, or even bigger than that. You know, something that's really large that takes shelf space. Mm-hmm. But luckily, Skylanders sells. Where this, you don't know. You don't know. It might not sell well at all. Because I mean, this the same argument you could give is like, I mean, are people just as excited for this game as they were for when the Dark of the Moon game for PS3 came out? You know what I mean? It's I'm saying the casuals. I'm not saying so much so. Like the casual gamer.
I'm seeing more people excited for this. I don't think a lot of casual people even knew. I mean, besides the common what is it, like G4 or whatever, IGN, saying that it's by the same developer, I think everybody knew that one wasn't going, it was going to be a movie game. It wasn't going to be a Revenge of the Fallen or a War for Cybertron. And I'm seeing from comments of people posting, you know, on the teaser trailers and everything, and you know, misnaming a whole bunch of robots, but still sounding super excited. They do sound, you know, as excited as they were for Warp Cybertron, a little bit more.
Totally, maybe because more. The first game did very well. It did a lot better than even what High Moon expected. So it showed that there was a lot of people that were on that wanted this. But the question is, are they going to come back? You know, now that they know what they knew from the first game. Are they willing to let go of their Call of Duty or, you know, Team Fortress or whatever shooter that they already spend a lot of time playing? And are they going to stop?
Uncharted 3.
or Uncharted, whatever that may be, that whatever online shooter they're playing at the time. But are they willing to then take that time aside to level up their scout or whatever, you know, we're going to have this time around? You know, so it's and to invest, I believe, how much is the game? $69 regular, you know, or $59 to invest that kind of money. So it's something we'll wait to see. Despite, I mean, for us, it's a no brainer. But I'm just saying for the big market, that percentage that really matters to High Moon, which is everyone else, you know.
Yeah.
Well, you don't think that the, you know, collectors, the way we go gaga over toys, you don't think that a really cool repaint of a False Cybertron toy would be enough to draw us to buy that from whoever has that exclusive?
Oh, totally.
Like, say you package the game with, you know, I don't know, like say a Bruticus, but in a unique color scheme that can't get anywhere else. Maybe
I just said
color.
Whoever would have the toy exclusive would get my money. So, of course, yeah, totally. It would be me for sure.
I think personally I'll go with the GameStop one with the G1 Prime skin. I mean, not just because I have a membership at GameStop, but I mean, I just think that pre-order is just way better than Amazon.
Yeah, of those more two, for your money. Given the choice, I'd take that one too. Yeah.
Part of me still wants the Bruticus. I'm the rebel. I'm the person who bought the Amazon,
the,
you know, demolisher for all the Cybertron.
With the purple stripes.
I was before he came out on DLC. I was the only one with demolisher and escalation.
Oh really?
And I was. Well, there was like two people that my friends knew about, and you saw Shockwave and everywhere else, you know, all the time when you were playing Escalations on Public. And I was, you know, everyone was like, "Ooh, is that Demolisher?" And I was like, "Yes," but I can't even do that with this because he's going to be single player only. I mean, I could record some videos, which I don't like recording the videos for single player. That's people can play single player on their own time. Multiplayer, they want to know what they're buying, and I'm showing them this is the gameplay you're going to get. Come buy this game and play with me. That's what I do.
Innuendo.
Yeah, I definitely think the Optimus one is definitely more worth your money because we don't even know how long this segment with Bruticus is, and if you're playing 20 minutes as G2 Bruticus, it's like, well, that was such a waste of a pre-order.
It's only that if you ask the whole fandom, which would you prefer, a G2 repaint or a G1 with G1 with some more G1? I think, I mean, just explaining it like that, you know, it's pretty obvious which one, what people are going to go with.
Most definitely. Yeah. Well, I think we've beat that subject to death. let's move on to our final subject here before our prime discussion. Masterpiece Thundercracker in Toys R Us Planogram. Discuss Insane Galvatron.
My first question is, will this be the new Starscream mold, or will this be go with the old mold to match the Starscream and Skywarp?
Why use the old mold?
I honestly am kind of leaning towards I think it would be the old mold. I think that it's one of those more you might as well, you know? And by the old mold being the Skywarp mold, because they never really... because the Skywarp mold that was used in Walmart was originally the Starscream mold. It wasn't the Skywarp mold used exclusively for Takara. Because for the people who don't know, Starscream had an exclusive face, which was the smirk.
Mm-hmm.
Skywarp had the grin, which he had like a snarling grin kind of thing. And when they poured it over Skywarp to America for Walmart, they used the Starscream mold. So he didn't have that exclusive face, if you will, if you want to call it an exclusive face. So if I had to guess, I think they won't use the smaller mold. I think that they'll. Well, did we get a price on this one?
I don't think so.
I don't think so. I think it was just popped up in there.
So like if I had to guess, I think they might use the older mold just to get more mileage out of it. I don't know.
If it's the new mold. I'll take it because I like the look better. And the changes may be subtle, but I hated the hip kibble. I'm going to get the new Starscream eventually. I'd like to have Thundercracker and Skywarp, and if I could get one of them at Toys R Us, be cheaper than importing Takara. But if it's the old mold, I'll pass.
It's one of those things where I get a feeling if it is the new mold, you're going to have just as many fans going, great, now I have, you know, tall Starscream, tall Skywarp, and mini Thundercracker. And then you're going to have the other group of fans that are going to be like, well, at least it's the better mold, but now where's the other two? You know, yeah.
Is the new mold smaller? I thought it was the old mold with just some tweaks.
Isn't it the like? To my knowledge, I believe it's a little. It's a couple of heads smaller or something.
I think it's the same mold because it's pretty much just a remold. It just has new parts.
I don't own the new one, so.
I'm pretty sure it's the same size.
That's what I was under the impression.
As Starscream.
I thought it was originally done like that to match with the new. I guess I will quote the new scale that they're going for now with Masterpiece Toys.
So Starscream always did kind of fit it anyway because he was shorter.
Yeah, he did. He was kind of. He was the first one to do that actually. Yeah. It was MPO3.
To be honest, I'd be happy either way because I'm a Thundercracker fan too. I mean, well, I love Skywarp's my favorite, but Thundercracker, I'm a Thundercracker fan, so I think I'll pick him up.
You know, I'm going to go on record and saying it's the new mold because to me it makes sense for Hasbro to do Thundercracker as the new mold so that we're getting the new mold and getting a new character.
Well,
because
it's also
Starscream was already.
Go ahead. Oh, I was going to say it's one.
Sidebird 2. I'm the moderator.
You go first.
Well, I would say because Starscream was already Starscream and G1 Colors was already sort of a Hasbro exclusive, and so it doesn't make sense to do Starscream again using that mold. So it makes sense do Thundercracker.
Also, because I think we saw that progression and evolution of QC errors and everything, where there was a lot of problems at Rodimus initially. Then the American version came out and kind of fixed some problems, but then had other issues. And then when they did the version 2.0 back in Japan again, which was the December release, it was like a merge of the two. So it's a possibility, they'll probably go with the most up-to-date mold to go with that. And again, to get mileage out of it, because they had to do engineering and tweaks and everything, so... That's probably why we're getting it to begin with, maybe. You know? It's interesting that it's even... Honestly, I didn't expect it. It's kind of interesting that they're doing it. I thought they would have probably went with whatever... You know, they're probably already planning ahead for whatever would be the next thing. Whether it be, oh, hey, we could get, you know, Sideswipe on the shelves or whatever.
I wonder if it's going to be the anime color, the light blue, or just a straight-up, like, toy-colored dark blue.
Yeah, the dark blue from the toy was really dark blue.
So, I would like to see an anime, honestly.
It's possible,
I think they'll go something in between because the anime would probably be a little too light.
Well, and the thing is, every single American release always made sure to do something about itself to make it different. You know, they always made sure to go out of their way to do something that was a little different from the Japanese release. So that is a possibility. They could do a drastic thing like making it light blue, and then the Japanese going, Americans got us this time. You know,
to me, the perfect Thundercracker color, as far as in a toy form, was the Robot Master. I loved the Robot Master color. I mean, the anime blue to me looks so gorgeous on that figure, and the contrast with the matte. Well, I think it was a black. I loved it. I mean, I wish that every Thundercracker was that color. And I hope this one is.
That would be better. I agree with you. That would be a better direction for it to do.
Nats, your thoughts on Masterpiece Thundercracker?
I also hope that they go with the new mold because I don't like the hip kibble on the old one. But other than that, I'm pretty impartial. I like blue either way. And I like Thundercracker, so.
I like the color blue.
Yeah.
I like any blue. Shade of blue.
Oh, blue skies. I'm not going to sing because I can't sing.
So when is it you guys supposed to be hitting?
Size comparison.
Well, it's showing up on a planogram. There was a photograph of it on TFW on the in the news forum.
Yeah, looking at the planogram, is it like a current planogram or a future planogram? Is it like the next reset they're going to do, so it's going to be like within weeks? Or is this months?
The past, we've gotten planograms that were like stuff that were going to come out in 6 months or something. So, and it's interesting because Hasbro never mentioned anything. You know, like that would be something that would have been something that maybe it'll be at SDCC.
Thinking that's one of those things that they say for SDCC because, well, I think we mentioned this in our BotCon discussion a few weeks ago. That's another thing that really pisses me off about Hasbro at BotCon. It's like, here you are at a Transformers convention where everybody there is pretty much there for Transformers. Why not show us the bulk and the biggest news of Transformers instead of saving your wad for SDCC when you might have 10% of the people in the room who may actually give a rat's ass about Transformers?
Yeah, and you know, while it's totally understandable why, you know, okay, SDCC is huge, even by that you know statement, a lot of those people are just kind of tuning in just to get a nice warm seat or just check out this Transformer thing, but a majority of them aren't going to be buying it.
Exactly. You know?
Where everyone in that room is almost on bated breath of everything, single thing Aaron Archer's showing us, you know?
I never understood that. Next week in the TFCon discussion, we might discuss this a little more, but how is Hasbro Canada with their unveils? Do they show anything?
Well, what Hasbro Canada does, it does two things. It shows everything that BotCon showed us. So, and usually because it's also like 3 months later and so many photos have leaked and stuff, so it's usually cool. But what they also do is they usually show us Canadian exclusive stuff that shows up. There's a company in Canada called Canadian Tire, and once in a while they'll get an exclusive, but the exclusive will kind of be a port over from, say, a Kmart, which is a store we don't get here in all of Canada.
Most of ours are closed down anyway.
Yeah.
Or not so worth visiting.
It's one of those things where they also use that time to say, hey, you know that exclusive that was announced at BotCon that's going to be a Kmart exclusive or a Target exclusive? Well, here's our announcement. It's going to be at Zellers, or it's going to be, you know, like... So they kind of use it in that sense. It's nothing really new. Like, I think only once we got the scoop on something was when they announced Cyclonus. BotCon had the gray resin they showed off. We got the final colored version. That was it. I think that was the only time we had really big news, like in terms of a preview that no one got yet. And I think that was 2008, I want to say, or 2009, one or the other. But they're cool, Hasbro Canada. We'll get into that next show.
Must. Anybody else have anything further to say? Oops, my water bottle is falling over. Anything further to say about Masterpiece Thundercracker? Last final thoughts on that.
What do you think its accessories are going to be? Because lately it has been sort of...
A mini reflector, please. No, it's not going to happen.
A little camera.
Let's see what you could see.
Because Hasbro's kind of been surprising us with the accessories and some
That's a good question.
It would be cool if there was something, although past experiences outside of the Dr. Archiville with Starscream, there really hasn't been anything with that mold, so yeah. It'd be interesting.
Didn't Skywarp get like different faces besides the one?
Well, just the flippable faces, but aside from that, there's just nothing, like not in terms of accessories, though, you know what I mean? Mm. Like those characters don't really like... Especially a character like Thundercracker, it's like...
Okay, then Skywarp has the faces, what do you think Thundercracker's will be if he doesn't get any sex or accessories? Maybe he just has, one gimmick. Face.
Thundercracker, his Takara release, did have his own face too. It was just another snarky kind of face that was just different from Skywarp's. So it's a possibility they'll port that over, I'm going to assume, you know, but again, that's... I can't set anything in stone with that, but from an accessory side, like you said before, with the reflector, aside from that, I can't really think of anything that associates with the character, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, because really, you know, if this is the new mold, see, in Japan the Starscream was released with the coronation getup.
Yeah, that's true too.
And so I wonder what, because it wouldn't make sense that for that come with Thundercracker.
Yeah, so
I'm wondering what Hasbro will do.
Who knows? It wouldn't be the first time that a masterpiece has been released in America and stuff was missing. Rodimus is one of those cases too. So by taking away the cape and the crown and the pieces and everything, will obviously put budget into something else maybe. So who knows? That's who knows?
Every time I look into a monitor, Prime, my circuits sizzle. When are we gonna start busting Decepticons?
I want you to make a special run to Autobot City on Earth.
But Prime, now!
We are now entering the Transformers Prime episode discussion area. If you haven't seen the latest episode, then be forewarned that you may be spoiled by listening further. Our final topic of the night is Transformers Prime episode Toxin. Cyburn 2, you want to give us a brief overview of it?
Yep, so we're coming up to the end of this four-part adventure where the cons and bots are splitting up and finding these four relics. And last week's episode left us on the cliffhanger of Bulkhead coming through the ground bridge with a hole in his back and smoke coming out of him. And it killed Ratchet's, victory and made us wonder what was going to happen this week. So this week we flash back to when the group is splitting up again, and Bulkhead's going out on his own to find his relic, and we go to a very sort of mountainous volcano region. And at the same time, Megatron dispatches his Insecticons, and we get we actually get an Insecticon named Hardshell, which is the new name for Bombshell, as we discussed last week with the Fall of Cybertron Hardshell. So Megatron asks, who among you is the strongest, is the most fierce? And Hardshell speaks up, and so we get some characterization out of this Insecticon that up till now all the Insecticons were just drones, more or less. And even better, Hardshell is voiced by David Kaye.
Yes. I'm sure we'll
all discuss in a bit. So the Insecticons and Bulkhead both go after this relic, and they end up finding it, and it's something called Tox-N, which is a toxic energon that the Decepticons weaponized back on Cybertron and decimated large amounts of Autobots with it. So Bulkhead decides this is too dangerous to keep and it's too dangerous to leave, so he decides he has to destroy it. And the only way to do this is to subject himself to it and throw it into the volcano.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. He had to deal with the effects of it, and from what we're given is that this stuff is pretty nasty stuff, and exposure to it doesn't take long to cause almost a stasis lock and then death. So the episode turns into Bulkhead struggle to destroy it while the Insecticons are trying to hunt him down. And in the end, yeah, Bulkhead achieves his mission, but at a price. Hardshell gets him while he's retreating through the ground bridge, and we are left once again with Bulkhead on the floor of HQ with a hole in his back.
And we still don't know his fate.
Yes!
Yeah.
Yes, the same cliffhanger. It made me so mad. I was like, this can't be the end of the episode. It's only been like 15 minutes.
And we're on mid-season hiatus, too.
Yeah.
Oh.
So it's it was very disappointing to be left on that same cliffhanger. No rushing him to to the med spit station or anything like that. We're still left with him on the ground with a hole in his back.
Hmm.
So basically, last week's cliffhanger was just to get us excited for this week's cliffhanger.
I think this is the first time on any show I remember having the same cliffhanger 2 weeks in a row. And not even like the same event happens twice. It's the exact same event. They just show it again, and look, we're still going to leave you hanging.
I think the only thing that really stuck out with me that episode is that Fowler said, "Can I has cheeseburger?"
I honestly
facepalmed when that. I was like,
"I can
really?
Has cheeseburger."
I can has cheeseburger.
I was like, "Wow!"
I never thought I would hear Ernie Hudson utter those words.
I was like, "Wow!"
It made me laugh.
You didn't even catch it at first, IG.
I caught it when I was watching.
I facepalmed so hard. I think I missed some of the episode because I was just had my hand on my face the whole time. I found that the whole thing with Bulkhead, with the Energon, it was totally a homage to Lord of the Rings, though. For anyone who hasn't seen the movies or read the books, Return of the King, the end of the movie. So I'm not going to say much past that. But whoever's listening who knows what I'm
I totally see that. I didn't see when I saw the episode, but I see it now.
Yeah, like I guess maybe Orsi and Kurtzman, maybe they kind of wanted to homage that because they're big fans of Peter Jackson. So I kind of was like, oh, are they trying to do that? Like, and also because I guess it's an evil entity and has to be cast out. So I don't know, something like that. Just I was making those connections.
I never would have seen that until you pointed that out. But now that you pointed it out, I'm probably never going to unsee it.
No, but I don't know. That was the first thing that popped in my head. And I'm not even a big fan of Lord of the Rings. It's just I was like, huh, that's kind of similar.
Well, anyways. One thing that popped out in my head was that, we have David Kay voicing Hardshell. And did any of you all catch the brief yes that he had?
Of course.
It was very graveled, but it was a very Megatron-esque yes. You know, and the setting, did anybody get a extreme Beast Wars feel with that setting that they were fighting in?
I did. I thought the mountain was going to explode and there was going to be extremely large quantities of raw energon.
And a golden disc falling down from the sky.
I definitely felt that Beast Wars vibe a little bit there.
Yeah. I mean, the whole time, whenever I knew David Kay was voicing a character in this show, I wasn't exactly sure that it was going to be the Insecticon, but it was. And whenever I knew he was going to be in this show, and then you see Bulkhead come through the space bridge into this environment, and I'm like, oh, wow, this looks like Beast Wars here, you know? I mean, very stark, very rocky, very angular, almost very simple environment.
Mainframe animation.
Mainframe animation.
And circa 1997. Yeah.
I'm like, how much more of an homage can you get for David Kay's character, the introduction of it? I hope that he's going to be around a while, but, you know... Seeing as how David...
he survived. Yeah. He survived the lava.
I would really like to see that. And furthermore, just the fact that they have David Kay, a Transformer veteran, if you will, voicing a character on the show, I hope they do this a whole lot more. I want to see Gary Chalk. I want to see Paul Eiding. I want to see Scott McNeil. I want to see Neil Kaplan. I want to see these guys in the show.
At least Gilvezan when Bumblebee starts talking.
I want to see them at least in cameo appearances.
I agree.
I would just like it that because it's David Kay and he's not The Rock. He's not a big name actor that, you know, okay, we can only have him for one episode.
Tony Todd. I'm surprised Tony Todd's been in there as long as he has.
Yeah. Well, that's just it. So I'm kind of hoping because it's David Kay, that also is an indication that we'll see more of Hardshell and flesh him out more. Because, it's one of those things with animated where it's like, hey, we got Judd Nelson for Rodimus. Yeah, good luck with that, you know. when they said Dwayne Johnson is Cliff Jumper, I'm like, yeah, he's going to be there for two episodes, man, max. And he didn't match my estimation.
Yeah,
it
was only not even 3 minutes.
You know, so like that's just it. So I was like, yeah, that's not going to last long because that's going to be the whole budget of the show.
One of the reasons why I wasn't too surprised to see Breakdown get off because, I mean, Adam Baldwin can't be cheap.
Yeah, well, that's another one, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
And then when Gina Torres does, you know, Arachnid, and now she's in Stasis. So, you know, these higher name ones are the ones you can expect to take long hiatuses or just be killed off.
Oh, it's totally, and I had this discussion with another person also about how animated is actually very good with when it comes to avoiding voice actor budget. I mean, there's a large amount of characters that either go MIA after their first appearance, or characters that don't speak at all in cases of Soundwave or Bumblebee. And then the rest of them are, I don't want to be insulting to it, but anime actors are usually cheaper. A Steve Blum is a lot cheaper to hire than the likes of, say, again, you know, Fowler's voice actor,
Ernie Hudson.
You know, like, there's a lot of cheaper alternatives. And I think it used to be, it was originally Sue Blue who was handling she was the voice director, and she was also in charge of handling the budget. But now they have someone else that's in charge of it. And they're clearly going about it in a very budget-efficient kind of way. And bringing in David Kaye, which, again, no insult to David Kaye. I think he's one of my favorite voice actors ever, especially with Beast Wars Megatron. But he's a cheaper choice, and he's easier to keep around in a long term, you know, which is good because I want more character from characters.
Yeah. I mean, even Optimus and Megatron don't get a lot of screen time. Optimus even more because
I'm sometimes convinced that a lot of Peter Cullen's lines are pre-recorded. I hate to say it, but it's because the way the character is depicted. Mm-hmm. This Prime is very like you go back and watch G1 and see how Peter Cullen did Prime, and then go back then watch this one.
It's
like
worlds different.
Yeah, like, you know, people are like, oh, you know, Cullen's doing Prime again. It's not the same thing. Peter Cullen is doing a different character completely because it's, you know, you'd have like a scene from Mormon ECI Parts 1. It's like, you know, they've created a magnetic junction. Fire the lasers. You know, that was like the G1 Prime. If it would have been the same scene, but it would have been Transformers Prime, it'd be like, you know, they've created a magnetic junction. Well, Jazz, in situations like this, the battle must be engaged. You know, like everything is so reachy. No, but it's true. That it wouldn't be something like that G1 Prime, you know?
Yes, that's very true.
I think the only thing that they really bring to the table with Cullen as Prime is the voice recognition. I mean,
it's the name.
It's the name and the voice recognition. I mean, you hear Prime and it sounds like Prime, but it doesn't sound like Prime.
It doesn't. Yeah, that's the that's always been something that's always bothered me about the way that character has been depicted, is that everything is some kind of thing that you would read in a Christmas card or something, or something. Yeah. It's just something that you would read from, you know. It's like, Optimus, should we get this Energon? Sometimes we must get stuff that we don't understand. You know, it's always like, it's like, okay, just, you know, please.
Every line,
no,
has to be an epic line.
You know, but that's every line that, like, I think Cullen also kind of forgot how he used to be. I think that Peter Cullen was being told by other people how much they loved Optimus Prime, and I think he forgot how he used to do the character, so he just assumed that the character was this gigantic, epic, everything is a one-liner before engaging into battle. And it's such a shame because you watched G1 Prime when it was his younger days, and he was a really ragtag kind of leader character and very, you know, like another famous line, you know, sideswipe, give me your rocket pack, my rocket pack now! You know, like, you would not have that from Cullen today.
A booby trap that actually catches boobies.
You know, sideswipe, give me your rocket pack. My rocket pack? Yes, because a rocket pack will propel us to our victory. You know, it's like he would just do something. Like, it's everything would be something like that. You know?
Well, you had in G1, you had Dick Prime, and now in Prime, you have
Preachy Prime.
Preachy
everything,
Prime, yeah.
everything is, and again, it's not that I say I hate the series and I hate the character. It's just that's always been something about him that's kind of irked me. There was a whole episode with Dreadwing, you know, and Dreadwing carried that episode. Where Prime was just it was like Dreadwing character line, Prime preachy Prime line back at him. You know, it's like, I'm gonna kill you. Death is not the answer, Dreadwing. You know, it's like, oh, stop, just stop. You know, like I could
machines all over again.
You know, like I could write this stuff, and that's not a good thing. You know, like, come on.
I mean, I don't hate. I prefer the fact that Prime. I wish he would sound a lot more like his G1 self, but I don't hate this Prime.
It's a different Prime. It's a different character. It's like an animated Prime. You know where I mean? Where you do not associate animated Prime with G1 Prime. No. Animated Prime, it falls into that same bucket as, say, Rodimus and Optimus Primal, where it's the young leader. He's a different character. He just happens to be called Optimus Prime and turn into a truck and all these unfortunate situations that link him to that character. But in the end, he's his own character. And it's kind of the same thing. It's the same way how we look at the movie Prime and how he's this deranged, murdering maniac. And how
big
we kind of
douche.
Yeah, where he's his own kind of Prime. It just happens to have Peter Cullen's voice attached to it. Where when Prime was announced, the TV series, we were almost expecting the second coming of G1 Prime and G1 Megatron, which it really isn't. Frank Welker's Megatron couldn't be any different from his current one, you know. And
well, if you watch the special features on the Blu-ray, you know, they even talk about how they were instructed not to do their G1. Incarnations of these characters. They wanted them to be different. Frank Welker's Frank Megatron, Walker. They told him, we don't want the maniacal Megatron.
I don't think anyone wants it anymore.
They told him, we want him to be more subdued, more evil. You know,
well, if you played the first 2007 movie games where Frank Welker is playing that Megatron, for Megatron's voice for the movie Megatron, and you go, yeah, it's a good thing he didn't come back for it, because it's kind
like
of out of place.
Starscream, yeah. Sounds like Megatron. They sound backwards.
It's kind of out of place. Yeah, exactly. It just didn't work. And I'm like, yeah, you know what? Good on you, Hugo Weaving. You know, like, yeah.
Well, every other character.
I smell you, boy.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to.
Another example I think of is like Bumblebee. Prime Bumblebee couldn't be more different than G1 Bumblebee, not just in the voice acting aspect, just the way the character is portrayed. So it's not surprising that they would, you know, update Prime and Megatron as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what?
Do you want to do all the characters? What about RC? Bulkhead.
Well, there was a Bulkhead in G1.
Well, he's got animated. But the only thing, he's similar, but he doesn't have that fun, easygoing buddy, he's a wrecker. He still happens to have some sort of...
I wish...
Like Boulder, he paints.
I wish Bulkhead sounded like Cleveland Jr. It could totally happen.
Give me a second to imagine that. Does anyone want to try doing that?
It's the same voice actor, right?
Exact same voice actor. Kevin
Michael
Richardson. Someone
needs to make that YouTube video.
Well, I'm waiting for, you know how Family Guy, Family Guy, I would suppose that Cleveland Show has, you know, they could do a Transformers skit or something other. Why not have Bulkhead appear in Family Guy, or not Family Guy, but
Cleveland Show.
It would be totally awesome to have Kevin Michael Richardson do his Bulkhead for just like a little clip, you know, a little skit. It would be awesome.
I just don't think he's, you know, targeting adult audiences. I don't think he's recognizable enough.
Yeah, but they throw the Transformer things in there for us nerds. You know, that's what that would be for. I mean,
yeah, I mean, like Bantor comment. I mean, that was so niche.
Yeah.
From Ratchet. I mean, even the average Beast Wars fan would miss that, you know? Like that's a
Bantor comment?
Yes, there was a Bantor comment.
I actually missed that one first time by.
Wasn't in this episode, was it?
No, it wasn't in this. No, I'm just saying like in Prime in general, you know what I mean?
When was that?
It's like two or three episodes ago.
Ratchet made it when he was I guess, drunk, if you will. I forget which episode it was.
Oh, yes, it was. It was the episode where Ratchet had the amped up Energon, and he was...
That's right.
And he was like, hooah, you know. Yeah. And
sorry, you guys. You guys keep saying stuff, and I keep giggling. I need to mute my mic.
No, that's awesome.
Oh, giggle on the mic.
I love that episode.
He had a line where it's like, oh, you should have saw what I did to Bantor. He was just a tiger. No, he was just a baboon until I put a tiger in his tank.
Yeah.
And it's like, whoa, wow, that is a total.
I didn't even catch that.
Yeah, that's now you're going to have to go back and rewatch that episode.
Oh, yes, I have to. Well.
Yeah, it's the episode where I can't remember the name of it now. It's the one where Ratchet
was
one with synth Energon.
Yeah, it's... like one of the it's one of the very first few episodes. It's maybe like episode 5 or 6, I would think.
Well, five
would
be
season one.
Well, no, I guess 6 or 7 then. Yeah,
that was in season one, wasn't it?
Yes, it was season one.
It was very early on.
It was right after Bulkhead did his painting episode.
Mm-hmm.
Believe so.
Which was nothing like animated Bulkhead.
But we digress. We went off on a tangent. we need to get back to Tox N. Anybody want to give their thoughts on the fight between Bulkhead and Hardhead?
Hardshell.
I'm sorry. And thank Galvatron. You want to talk about it?
Well, it's once again the Insecticons are inconsistent with their strength level. You know, they're really powerful one episode, then another episode they're just one shot falling out of the sky, getting taken out by trees, and then all of a sudden they're super powerful again.
I agree.
Yeah.
Because the first episode we saw one, or then the second episode.
One was more than anybody can handle.
He was beating the crap out of Megatron. You know?
Yeah. Well, I did notice that the other time that we heard a Insecticon talk was the episode where Arachnid got put in stasis. And they all dropped onto the ship and subservient to Megatron again, and one spoke. And that was a huge inconsistency, because before that, they didn't speak. And then the next time we saw them, they didn't speak. And I'm kind of wondering now if the one that spoke wasn't Hardshell, maybe he's the only one that can talk. I have to go back and rewatch that episode, see if his colors were, if he had the stripes and stuff.
But what is his voice? I didn't pay attention to his voice in that episode. What's it like? Because what if it was,
it was
one
very
of the
similar.
Other three?
Very similar. I don't know if it was Frank Welker or not, but it was a very similar sounding voice.
Yeah.
It's one of David Kaye actually does have range, and that's one of his examples of it. Yeah. He is able to do other stuff, so I mean it wasn't straight up anything that he's previously done to my knowledge, like of other characters, but it was good. I'm just glad he's there.
Yeah.
That's I think more than anything.
Yeah, I'm glad that I was kind of sad that all these voice actors that have been with us for so long have kind of disappeared from the series for a while. It's like, you know, David Kaye and Gary Chalk were staples for most of Transformers history.
Yeah.
Very much so.
Very much so. Well, any last thoughts on the episode as a whole?
Pretty good. The episodes have kind of been, I find with Prime, you either get a really, 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 really good episode, or you get something that's at least passable. I've yet to see an episode that just, I hated it, I didn't like it at all, but.
I could do without the clip episode.
Yeah, this one was almost a clip episode.
Yeah.
There's so many flashback filler. And tell me, tell me Insecticons don't look like that.
I don't. From Godzilla.
Gigan, yeah.
Yeah. A little bit. But you know what? Who knows what the animators are referencing on. I mean, a lot of stuff is subconscious with a lot of artists.
I really hope it was Gigan, because it makes them even cooler to me.
I'm totally putting that image in the enhanced version of this podcast. Yeah.
For the Prime discussion.
Yeah.
So people will start listening and they'll be like, "Why is there a picture of Gigan?"
Well, they'll see the Prime logo for most of it, and then whenever I mention that, they'll look at it and go, "Hey, that is that."
Now you should totally put it in at the beginning, so it's there the whole time, and they can't figure out why.
No.
Put it as the title image when you click on it. This is our Prime our Transformers podcast. It is a picture of Gigan.
You're darn lucky I didn't use Cocutron as a logo for our podcast. Like,
why am I lucky? That would be awesome. It's more like I'm unlucky that you haven't.
I was just joking about that, but hey. Well, I believe that'll wrap up this episode of not Geek Existence Transformers anymore. It's TFYLP. Want to thank Proto Man for joining us this week, and we hope to have you back next week. Hope you enjoyed yourself.
I did. I had a good time. You guys are fun.
And hopefully next week we'll be able to do our TFCon special episode to highlight the show and get a little history on the show and find out more about it from the people behind it. I don't think there's enough coverage of it, and I really wish that I was going and maybe a couple other people was going this year so we could actually cover the convention there on the podcast. But next year I really this is a little side note. I know we mentioned it before the podcast. I'm getting a little cheesed at Fun Publications and their public displays of non-affection that they're giving people. And, I'm ready to try another convention. And I hear so much positive about TFCon and hear how so much fun is had there by people who have been to both conventions. I'm very curious, and I really look forward to next week's episode if we can get everything together and if Colin can join us and discuss the finer points of TFCon Canada. It's for those of you who are listening that may not know, TFCon is I guess it would be safe to say it's Canada's BotCon, isn't it?
Oh, it's BotCon Junior. If anything, it's not as big as BotCon, but it's pretty close.
It's BotCon what BotCon used to be.
Yeah, it's what BotCon used to be before, like the 2007. Yeah, essentially.
But if you're curious right now about TFCon, check out the website at tfcon.ca. And next week, hopefully again, we'll have more on that. Once again, thank you for joining us this week on TFYLP, and we hope to see you next week.
Out of the way, Hot Rod! Now!
TFYLP is brought to you by GeekExistence.com. The theme song Till All Are One by Stan Bush, available on iTunes. This podcast is for entertainment and informational purposes only and is not for profit. Any names, images, or music used within this podcast are copyright their respective owners and is not intended to infringe on said copyright. Thanks for listening.